When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
I've always worked hard and had everything. Mm-hmm. My truck, my car, my house, all the amenities of everything. I've always had that.
I mean, if you got to pee, you should go be able to use the bathroom, because guess what? If you go pee outside, you're going to get a ticket.
Yeah.
It's not right. Just because you're homeless and you don't have no money, you can't pee. You can't pee like a human being.
And all of a sudden, I'm on the street with a broken truck. And that was my first introduction to what homelessness, real homelessness, was about.
And when I decided to be a mom, I never thought in my civil rights set of mind I was going to end up pulling on the streets, begging for food for them, begging for money to get gas just to make it from point A to point B, just because they need a shower, they need a proper place to sleep.
You know, and I would try to find a corner somewhere, you know, in the light, because they say stay in the light. So I'd go in a corner and I would just shiver, you know, as long as I could, and I couldn't take no more.
I felt like a failure. I felt like I wasn't protecting them right, that I failed them. And everybody around me that saw us on the streets, instead of giving a helping hand, they looked down on me, you know? It was hard. It was very hard. And I didn't think we were going to make it that first night. I couldn't sleep. Yeah. You know, it was cold. Yeah. All I was doing was trying to keep them warm.
Every episode, I try to include music that would fit a certain theme or a certain direction where the topics about houselessness can be looked at, one, to keep you engaged, as well as to you to think about some of the musical choices and expose you to some music maybe you've heard before, but also expose it in ways that you've never considered the context. This music that I have for the Oceanside, due to the reason that Oceanside has a very strong pro-military base, and usually if you're a country right now, if you're thinking about military bases, you're thinking of planes overhead, guns, theater of war, guns fire, bombs going off, and the like, and showing our troops in such a historic, in a more heroic light. But this time, I want you to look at the music in a different light. There is a war going on, and there are losers, and there are winners, and there are people that are the casualties. And this war is against the unhoused. I want you, when you hear these songs and you have the images of these explosions, think of the devastation that causes by war, but also think of the devastation that we have war against poor people. Think of the thoughts that we have that are negative about poor people, and think of them as those bombs exploding in an unhoused person's life that needs help. When we see these parades or see these flights overhead, think of the police helicopter that's circling when they're doing a horrible sweep or displacement or eviction against them and their home. When you see them marching in lockstep and military step, think of the police descending upon en masse on an encampment, telling them they have 10 to 15 minutes to leave. When you see the bugles and the drums and all of that, think of the music of death and destruction as the claws of destruction comes and tears up a person's tent. I want you to look at this music in a newer light, and I want you to remember that they're in military jingoism. There's always winners and losers, and in order for us to feel that we are heroic, we have to make someone the villain. The question is, why do we make the unhoused community the villain? Enjoy this episode.
I am the eye of the storm inside. I am silent and strong, just waiting for the right moment to strike. Coil you like a cobra.
Welcome to another episode of We the Unhoused. If you hung with me so far, I thank you, and I've been getting some support in new arenas. If you are a first-time listener, please sit back and listen and learn. For many that don't know, that are listening from the auditory perspective, I have a podcast on Pandora, SoundCloud, as well as iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, to name a few. I also have a visual one, for the unhoused. It's a little bit more lengthier, and it's designed primarily for the unhoused, but you're more than welcome to watch and learn. Many people complain of the length, but the reality of it is that you, housed community members or housed listeners, you are the guest. We're not here to coddle you or make sure that you listen to it. We welcome you to come and listen, but we definitely are not here to, for your sensibilities if you feel the matter is too long or you feel whatever kind of way. This podcast is for we the unhoused, it's for the unhoused community. Their resources, their perspectives, there's a sense of solidarity, and there's a sense of community that is lacking in housed community. So let's get this clear and off the bat. So this episode is going to be lengthy because this is one of the few mediums where we're not having a microwave popcorn quickly talking over unhoused people, dismissing unhoused people, or making it so it's palatable for producers or soundbite. This is their time to ventilate or finally have people to sit down and listen to their story. And if you cannot be able to understand that, well, there's nothing more I can be able to make you understand. So welcome to this podcast. This podcast is stationed in Oceanside, California. I have been going and in comparing, contrasting in different locations. The location in this particular episode is has some similarities in L.A. because they are unhoused, of course, and then they have the feelings of being criminalized. The intensity of Los Angeles, California, in some respects, eclipses sometimes the criminality in Oceanside, and then sometimes it matches it. So please sit back, listen, not just hear, and learn what goes on in Oceanside from the firsthand accounts from the unhoused community there. And I hope we meet in the light of understanding. This is Theo Henderson from We the Unhoused. I'm here in actually, literally, in the section of City Hall.
And we're here. This is supposed to be where everyone can get some type of justice. City Hall is supposed to be for all of the people. Here, I'm curious, how does it play with the unhoused community? Is it like Los Angeles, where only certain voices are heard, such as NIMBYs? From my cursory observation, it seems like NIMBYs have driven the picturesque kind of scene that you see here. It's very oceanside, very wavy, very tropical, but there are unhoused people here in this sea of looking for prosperity. There are people here scrabbling, and as you've heard me say in my earlier statements, that the unhoused condition is exploding. People are living in impoverished areas, and they cannot afford the living cost that is seen to be ballooning. Oceanside seems to be going through a gentrification cycle, which bizarrely as it is, it seems like it's too expensive to live here anyway. Now it seems like these look like, in their version, I guess, they're ghettos, but this is very well-maintained ghettos. So I guess it has to be, we have to keep up with capitalism and make it so inaccessible for everybody, but the select few. So City Hall seems to have pretend to be for the people with the biggest pockets, where they can deposit the money into the people that can make things happen. So follow us further on, and we will see just how deep this rabbit hole goes and figure out what is going on with the unhoused community here and how can they activate to make sure that they don't get swept away like the waves in the ocean. This is Theo Henderson from the Weedy Unhoused, and there's more to follow, and may we meet again in the light of understanding. Oceanside has a lot of signs. For example, the sign here that says no swimming, bathing, and wading is prohibited. And what is the unknown fact that I know is being unhoused, there were places where unhoused people, that they didn't have showers, they would be able to wash their clothes or shower or bathe in the nighttime where they would not be vilified for it. But unfortunately, as you know, people disdain the unhoused. They use that as a lightning rod point to criminalize unhoused people for trying to have the same dignity that other people want to have. Good afternoon. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy Unhoused. We are here not in Los Angeles. We are here in Oceanside, California. Behind me, you can see we're next to the library, Ocean Park Library, public library. And not too far off is the City Hall of Ocean Park. As you probably have guessed, Weedy Unhoused is investigating the unhoused crisis here all over in the California area. And Oceanside has offered some interesting insights thus far. So the beginning of this episode, what I've noticed when I came in, that it was a very different than the other places that I've investigated. For example, Santa Cruz has San Lorenzo Park. Los Angeles has Echo Park and unhoused all over and scattered or also very visible along with the special enforcement zones. Ocean Park does not have special enforcement zones, but they have camping, anti-camping signs all over. For example, there's no bathing here. There's no offers of services that will be provided for unhoused to sleep or camp around in these areas. And it seems like it's heavily enforced. But what it is also I've seen is that a lot of the unhoused seem to be in constant motion and movement. It's always maybe they're going to services or maybe that there's a tacit understanding that they can't stay in a place too long. The contrasting thing is across from us near the bank, there are a couple of unhoused people who have set up shop to stay. This is the first of many, of the first time I've seen any unhoused person that's actually resting or laying down, but I don't see any of the police officers coming to arrest them, and I don't see any loss of services, and I definitely don't see sanitation like I saw earlier in other episodes that coming to do care sweeps. So this episode provides a lot of more interesting insights how each place deals with the houseless crisis. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy Unhoused, and I'm going to take you a journey on Oceanside. Yes, it's near the ocean, and this is near picturesque areas, but each place has a character and community, or as well as a personality that they give. So what personality did they have against for the house here in this community? We're going to find out. May we again meet in the light of understanding. We'll be right back.
is Theo Henderson from Weedy and Howes. We're here in Ocean, California, and we have another guest who is also a YouTube sensation, and we'll have her introduce herself and give her perspective on living living in a unique situation. Hello, what's your name, ma'am?
Adalia Flores.
Miss Flores, how long have you been out here?
Off and on since 2016.
Wow, that's pretty tough. It's almost 2021. How did you end up out here, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm naturally from Oceanside, locally and naturally born. It's just, you know, when you don't have the proper support from either a family or close friends, there's times you hit a rough patch, like work, or, you know, it didn't work out between you and your spouse, and you end up out here, and, you know what I mean, you don't really know what it is till you hit the belly of the beast.
Yes.
So, you know, just certain things conspired in my life to put me here. That's kind of why I have a no bullshit point of view in life, because I'm already at the bottom. I'm tired of being at the bottom. And if I keep taking bullshit, I'm going to keep staying in the same cycle. So, you know what I mean? That's where we're at.
That sounds like a fighter and someone that hasn't given up. What was your first night? What was it like with your first time when you was out here? What was it, scary, or was it something that was eye-opening?
It was an eye-opener. At the time, I had my two daughters. We were living in the car, and we were living at the truck stop right here off the 5, right before Las Pulgas, which is the last exit before you get into San Clemente, you know what I mean? So it was an eye-opener, almost slap it to the face, because before I had children, I left California coming out of homelessness 2010. I was out here for a few months, and I was like, this. You know what I mean? So I left, and I had a few kids, and when I decided to be a mom, I never thought in my civil rights side of mind I was going to end up one on the streets, begging for food for them, begging for money to get gas just to make it from point A to point B, just because they need a shower. They need a proper place to sleep. We can't just fall asleep anywhere. Someone will call the cops on us and report us, and you know what I mean? But eventually, it really pushed me to do stupid stuff to
survive, basically survival. That's
yeah,
all it is.
That's all it is. But first night, it was an eye-opener for damn sure.
How did your kids take that? How did they realize, or they were too young to understand what was going on?
Too small. One, they were too small. My daughters were 2 and 1. And, you know what I mean? I tried making it as fun as we could. We go to the beach. If I had a little bit of money, and if I could splurge on them, because my 50, 70, 100 bucks to splurge on them is going to give them the moment I can't give them every day in a home. So I'm going to give them a moment, at least if I can do it right then and there. I'll go spend $100 at them at Chuck E. Cheese. And a lot of people say I'm dumb for doing that. And I don't think I'm dumb for doing that, because I'm giving them an opportunity to jump around, have fun, laugh, play. They can't do that strapped to a car seat all day.
But see, that's one of the arguments that I was having with one of the activists about unhoused. They forget that they're children. You can't make them like they're a prison and tell them that don't give them toys and things like that. They still have the same developmental issues like people that are housed. And if we get to that prison mentality or suffering, allow them to suffer, then we're creating a new generation of trauma. And that's why I'm against that.
Yes, I completely agree with that. 100%, 1,000%. Let's publicize that. Like, for real. But I did the most as a homeless mother, trying to survive out here, to provide and make it fun for them, because they didn't know. Yeah. They don't know about bills. They don't know 3.5 times. They don't know $1,300 for a studio. They don't understand that. They just know we're in the car today, and maybe we might eat chicken nuggets right now, and maybe later we might eat more chicken nuggets, and later a sopa. You know what I mean? But if I had the money to give them the opportunity to be happy and fun,
you know, some families, like I've interviewed, that's an airplane there. Some family, for example, I had interviewed a mother that had a young son, and the police were always threatening to take their son away. And I was wondering, because it was very scary, because she was living out in a park, and they kept coming by, you know, what they call Children Protective Services, police officers and things like that. Did you experience any of this kind of stuff?
I'm actually going through something like that right now, but the funny twist about that, I have two sets of kids.
Okay.
I have two daughters with one man and two sons with one man. Mm-hmm. My daughters went through the most turbulent times of homelessness for me, which was almost 2.5 years. I was pregnant in a car with my third. I took my brand new baby to a car with my two toddlers. At one point, we were 5 to a car, you know, with a brand new baby. I asked CPS, and I've called CPS plenty and many of fucking times to help me get out my situation. They said, since I am not negligent towards my children, they cannot take my children. That was then. This time around, someone said that I was along the lines of doing drugs and I'm homeless and this and that, and they take my sons away. So why you take my sons away? Oh, because you heard of this and that, I'm on drugs, but you know my situation for longest, and you have documentation, because when you call CPS, they document everything. Just like you call the welfare, they document everything. Social Security, they have to the fucking insurance company documents everything.
So instead of you calling them and voluntarily looking for help, they take it, she says stuff, and then basically decides to take your kids.
Basically, the way the system works, and this is kind of where you're coming into play, is showing light, and what Mr. Howell was showing you, oh, look, the city of Ocean said. Basically, if they can put you in their computer, because when they're talking to you in the computer, you know, on the phone, they're clicking crap. Click, 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 click. You know what I mean? Domestic violence is one of their subjects. Drugs is one of their subjects. Mental health is one of their subjects. You know what I mean? If you could fall in their brackets, that's where they're going to place you. So supposedly with my girls, there was nothing to put me in a bracket for CPS, so they couldn't help me. But now, supposedly because of the assumed drugs, they have a bracket. So then they interjected themselves and removed my children illegally. And now I'm having to jump through hoops to get them. And I have also on record with the CPS worker, I have to do all these services, and they may not be able to place me in housing. So they're going to give me my kids back. And guess what? I'll still be homeless.
That's horrible. I'm very sorry to hear that. I also know that you have something, some bright spots too, that you have an internet channel. So what? Tell us a little bit about that.
My internet channel is Adalia Flores reporting live from Oceanside, California. I have a couple videos. A couple activists hit me up on YouTube. They wanted my personal opinion on stocking stuffers. I was kind of against the stocking stuffers. I'm not hating on anybody's point of view on a gift for somebody that's less fortunate, but I felt, if you're going to put the time and energy for little hand sanitizers, little lotions, instead of doing that, why can't you maybe get a group of your church or whoever you are, you know, representing your organization, and try to get at least half a deposit for someone to get inside for Christmas?
That's a good idea, because in Los Angeles, we're working on like that mutual aid and giving unhoused people. Not only that, because like some of the unhoused need it for feminine hygiene products and be able to clean themselves, because it's or what we call dignity cards, give them gift cards, because some places in LA don't let unhoused people use the bathroom. Yeah. So what you got to do is you got to go and buy something, and then they'll open up the bathroom. So we try to do different creative ways, because you know they're very
okay. It should just be open for everybody, anybody. Absolutely. I mean, if you got to pee, you should go be able to use the bathroom, because guess what? If you go pee outside, you're going to get a ticket.
Yeah.
It's not right. Just because you're homeless and you don't have no money, you can't pee? You can't pee like a human being.
Well, they apparently think we don't go to the bathroom anymore once we come out on the street. We just go, it floats up in the clouds.
No, they apparently think you stopped living and you became dirt.
Yeah.
You just, pretty much. You get stepped on, you're nothing. The city looks at you nothing. The cops look at you nothing. Family look. You know what I mean? It's a sad cycle that we all struggle through. And the saddest thing, no one should really be pointing a finger or looking down on you, because God is a motherfucker. And he will catch you by your butt. And if you are talking crap about a homeless person, I hope to God that you say, I'm sorry, and I rebuke that, because he might make you walk our steps.
Very well said, and very well where we can end it at. This is Theo Henderson from Where You In House. I always say, karma never forgets an address. And if you are the ones that are on these committees that are talking horribly about unhoused people and lack the sensitivity and compassion, don't worry. the pandemic was only an opener. There's always something that can happen, a medical emergency, losing your job, and then you find out that the situation is not what you have been purporting it to be. This is Theo Henderson from Wedian House. I thank you all for listening, and it is my sincere hope that we have met in the light of understanding and we're doing something to make the world a better place. Thank you for inviting me in. It's very nice of you.
I was amazed.
So tell us a little bit about it. How long have you been out like this?
Oh, I don't know. 6 months or so. I went to prison, and when I got out of prison, my stepson had wiped out my finances.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Had sent my old lady over the edge. She just passed last month with Alzheimer's and dementia.
Okay.
We were retired. We had a beautiful home. We had income. We had everything you could think of having. And it all went south in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, that's very true.
I too was working before I got ill, and then I couldn't heal and get better and work because it's like it's impossible because you're going to need time to get things back on track. And so, and here I am in the same situation, but trying to highlight it. So what was it like when you first realized that this, you was going to be out on the streets? What was you thinking?
I was thinking, what am I going to do to survive? I've got mad skills when it comes to skill level. I have bosses call me up, even on crutches and wheelchair, to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do, it don't much stop me being mobility impaired.
Mm-hmm. I noticed you have like a tool shed here. What are you? Were you a mechanic or something?
I am. I refurbish apartments.
Oh, really?
Any kind of construction, I do electrical, I do this motor home right here was given to me by a friend.
Oh, that's cool.
And he got himself a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And this had no tanks, no wires, no plumbing, no anything in it.
But it got the elements. That's one feature, I think.
Yes, it does.
You know, in Los Angeles, they do have something similar, but unfortunately, the police criminalize and nitpick on every little here. I don't know what goes on here. Is that the same thing that happens here?
They come at us about once a week, once every 5 days, wherever we go. They have code enforcement.
Oh, I see.
Code enforcement will come at us en group, en masse.
Mm-hmm.
And they will boot us out of wherever we are, or they'll haul ass and they'll tow anything that's not registered. They'll grab, you know, which is something I have a hard time wrapping my head around.
Right. Is
the government pays these people to come in and take what little is left of somebody who has nothing to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and just completely destitute them.
Yes.
And
people that aren't living on the street, as if they have money just burned.
The people on the street have so very little to begin with, and these code enforcement people are just itching to take anything they have away.
Mm-hmm.
And then the police roust them and try to put them in jail.
Mm-hmm.
This virus thing has slowed their roll quite a bit. So they really can't come at us as hard and heavy as they'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are restricted from putting us in jail.
Their
populations are way outstanding.
And growing. People, especially like in Los Angeles, so many unhoused people at the parks, in the cars, on the streets. It's just like you can't jail everybody because there's just like people are becoming unhoused by the day.
I bought that black truck in front of us that has a camper shell and a rack on it. And I was sleeping under the camper shell, sharing space with my welder. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's... And then my friend gave me this place, and I moved into it. But I have so dearly missed my woman.
I can imagine.
We were retired, and I had built our house around her. Mm-hmm. The gardens were impeccable. The house was outstanding. We had half-inch marble, 6-inch marble Italian tile. Mm-hmm. This is a dual-wide mobile home. Mm-hmm. Okay? I mean, we had a Magellan refrigerator. The retail on that thing's $9,900. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden, I have nothing. My stepson's wiped out my shed of $75,000 worth of my working tools. They got rid of her car. Mm-hmm. I'm glad my buddy grabbed my truck, although he thrashed it while I was in jail. Mm-hmm. He had it. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand how somebody's son could do that to her. But all in all, the introduction of homelessness into a life that I've always worked hard and had everything. Mm-hmm. I've had my Harley, my truck, my car, my house, all the amenities of everything. I've always had that. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I'm on the street with a broken truck. My grandsons dropped me off at Pick Apart with a truck that didn't run. Mm-hmm. And just left me there. Mm-hmm. And that was my first introduction to what homelessness, real homelessness, was about.
What was your first night like? What did you do?
Wrapped up in some blankets and rolled up on the bed of the truck and went to sleep.
Oh my goodness. So when you woke up, did you figure out how you was going to, like, go to the bathroom, shower, things like that? What was those kind of steps like?
I still don't have a clue. I'm still working on that now. So, this has no facilities in it whatsoever. So, in that regard, I'm the same as the guy sleeping out here in a tent or under a sleeping bag. Mm-hmm. You do what you got to do. Yeah. And you try to make allowances. You try to, maintain dignity and honor. Mm-hmm. And if you try, you can.
Are you, you mentioned like the VA, are you a veteran?
Yes, I am.
Where did you serve?
I served in Vietnam.
Oh, okay. Thank you for your service. And are they trying to help you get you your own stable place or what?
Well, they made offers of housing and help, but so far everything they've offered has been group, dorm, or, it's been something that, I'm sorry, I can't live like that.
You because you're used to what, or is it frightening because of COVID, or is that you can't be around group?
I'm just an independent soul.
Okay.
And my little lady was the only person in my life that really mattered to me. Mm-hmm. And since I've become homeless, you find that there are very few good people out here. Mm-hmm. The ones that you do find, try to hold on to them.
Yes. Absolutely.
This fellow that's a couple of mobile homes up, he's a friend of mine and has been. We've been friends for almost 50 years.
Oh, really? Wow.
He's in a motorhome. He lost his house.
I'm sorry to hear that. You know, it's so many stories that I can would take forever, but I'm going to get as many stories as I possibly can and come back and see how you guys are.
We've leaned on each other for the last 50 years, back and forth. Mm-hmm. Materials and tools and know-how and this, that, and the other. We all have our specialties. Mm-hmm. But there's a few of us that are much more highly trained than other ones. Mm-hmm. And we have the better aspect of it, because anybody that has problems with their vehicles, their houses, and this is and that is, they come to us right off the top. They know we do things, and they come to us, and we generally get things fixed or removing or whatever. Mechanically, that man can make air run.
That makes sense. Thank you again, Mr. Hillbilly. I thank you for your time and your graciousness of inviting me into your home. One of the things I always like to talk about is like the journalists that don't understand that we are in your home and we act like guests. And it's very important that we don't take that for granted. And I try to also educate other people, like, even though we're unhoused, we require the same dignity that we would if you had a house or coming to your home. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy Unhoused. I thank you all for listening, and may we again meet in the light of understanding. This is Theo Henderson with We Are Unhoused News. Our first story, City Council member Chris Rodriguez is asking for more enforcement and criminalization on the unhoused community in Oceanside, California, using vouchers as a pretext to provide the police a way to cite unhoused people who, in his eyes, are uncooperative or service resistant. The unhoused person has a choice between taking the voucher or getting a citation or being arrested. And another story in Oceanside, the brush fire reignites blame on the unhoused community as a whole. Mayor Peter White blamed the unhoused community. He also states that his hands is frustrated that there's no single solution and most of the solutions are not going to be popular. He pretends that's probably criminalization is going to be, or a major sweep is going to happen. If you're unhoused and you want help, we have programs that will help. An activist states the lack of sufficient funding and local mental health resources leaves them in a precarious situation. Currently, Oceanside uses $3 million per year on the unhoused community. In San Luis Obispo, Parks Recreation Director Greg Avakian says the city will enforce a ban on tents in the park. They use this as a code to justify as well as to displace the unhoused community. There has been more aggressive sweeps in San Luis Obispo, and they are using this as a way to displace and find ways to criminalize and arrest them as well. Also in San Luis Obispo, they held a vigil for the unhoused community that have died. One died of COVID-19. Other causes of death include cancer, anaphylactic shock, unknown sickness, and getting hit by cars. One of the prominent members of the community who was a dishwasher that was an unhoused gentleman that didn't have enough funds to support himself in housing but still was unhoused and was employed gave back to the unhoused community by handing out meals and also as a dishwasher for 3 years. Other people that have passed away that are unhoused is Carlina, who died of cancer, Mississippi, who died from a fatal fall, Joe, who died of cancer, Christine from substance overdose, Jessica, anaphylactic shock, Marty, unknown illness, Bongo, unknown illness, John, attempting to cross Highway 101 at night, and Alicia, attempting to cross Highway 101 at night. In Los Angeles, it's been 50 days that they have been offered full reimbursement from FEMA. They are also refusing to seize hotels. Also in Los Angeles, the Airtel Hotel offers Project Room Key, aka DevTel, is closing and throwing residents back on the street. To date, there have been at least 11 deaths in Project Airtel. On Monday is the first launch by Services Not Sweeps, a pilot program that will allow unhoused people to be part of the solution and help clean up the neighborhood that they and the communities they inhabit. This motion was supported by Council Members Nithya Raman and Council Member Mike Bonney. However, it is important to note that this suggestion and this pilot program is Services Not Sweeps' brainchild. The Willows, a bridge home in Canoga Park, is known as a bridge to harassment and displacing the in-house community that are not into the bridge home. Councilmember Bob Blumenfeld is the progenitor of this harassment by creating special enforcement zones. To protest this kind of conversation or this kind of action, please call Bob Blumenfeld's office at 213-473-7003. And this is Unhoused News. Theo Henderson from Weenie and House. I'm here in Oceanside, California, doing my exploratory interviewing skills as well as investigating how the unhoused are treated here in Oceanside. And in our studios today is a wonderful, kind-hearted person by the name of Patricia. So let's say welcome her to our show and get her a little story. Hello, Patricia.
Hello.
Oh, I messed up your thing. I apologize.
Okay.
So how long have you been out on the streets?
7 years now.
I'm out on the streets in 8 years. So you beat me. I almost get there. How did you end up on the streets?
Well, I lost my job, and then my mom, she moved away. And
sorry to hear that.
Then when I get out on the street, then my identity gets stolen. Someone steals my wallet. It's got my birth certificate, social security card, and my ID.
Oh, my goodness. So, and it's from my own personal experience, I'm from Chicago, and the COVID-19 has made it very difficult for me to get my birth certificate. The reason why is nobody's in the office. I mean, even if you do have money, so, but Los Angeles, in order for me to get my social security card, I got to have two forms of legal identification. And the rules in L.A. doesn't apply to the rules of Chicago. They don't care what it is. They're going to follow their own protocols. So I can't get my social because of that very reason, which also inhibits me from getting the housing that I need because of the rules that are already in place. Are you in there facing that same situation?
Yes, I am.
So how is it? I would have to ask this. I always ask this first question. What is it like the first time that you was on the street? What did you fear and feel at that time?
Oh, my gosh. I have to take myself back.
Yeah.
All the mirrors. Oh, my gosh. I was scared. I was like a lost puppy.
How did you cope with it? For me, I walked all night.
Yes, that is pretty much what I did too.
Yeah. You know, and the next night I was so tired. I was trying to find a place to do it, but I heard so many horrible stories, and then too, and I was trying to face the reality that this can't possibly be happening. So the next night, I guess what I did.
What was that?
I got on a bus. I stayed on the. I couldn't walk anymore. Cause like, dude, I'm just freaking tired. I gotta find a place to just rest. And then guess what I saw? A lot of people that were on the street live sleeping on a bus, particularly in LA. It's a bus that runs all night. What was that like for here?
Well, me, I didn't sleep on the bus. Mm-hmm. It was more the Sprinter.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I would stay up all night. I just walk around, mm-hmm. you know, and I would try to find a corner somewhere, you know, in the light, because they say to stay in the light. So I'd go in a corner and I would just shiver, mm-hmm. you know, as long as I could, and then I couldn't take no more. I would look at the time. Once it hit 3:00, mm-hmm. I took my butt right over there to the Sprinter.
What's the Sprinter?
The Sprinter is kind of like a train, and it goes from here to Escondido.
Oh, so yeah, there are some people that do that too. You know, here in Los Angeles, where we're based out of, I started to stay at some time, like Santa Monica, and Santa Monica Pier is like this. But people don't tell you, like, you can freeze your butt off because at night it gets freaking cold. All that wind, that rain, bring up the rain. So how do you survive when it rains out here?
You try to seek shelter any way you can. A lot of the homeless people get together, and if they have money, mm-hmm. and they'll all pitch in together and get a hotel room.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they'll just shack up in the hotel room, you know, until.
Is it beneficial? Like, you guys get to use your own shower, get your TV on, and things like that. So I think that's an excellent idea too. So how long does this usually last?
Till the money runs out, pretty much.
I understand. Do they have out here, because we have in Los Angeles, like Project Room Key. Do they have Project Room Key out here?
I'm not for sure about Project Room Key.
Well, because they may not have it here. In Los Angeles, we got a high cases of COVID-19. And one of the issues is that they didn't want to use the hospitals where it filled up with unhoused people. And so what they suggested, and what activists have suggested down there, is there's a lot of abandoned, in L.A., it's a lot of abandoned buildings. There are a lot of abandoned hotels that are not at full capacity, unlike here. And they could put the unhoused in the hotels, and they can feed them and take care of them until they get them their housing situation straight. But unfortunately, NIMBYs, which is called Not In My Backyard, they resist that. They hate that. They feel like it's free stuff, and they feel like they shouldn't be allowed the same dignities that housed people get. Do they have any Project Room Key out here like that?
Not that I know of from my experiences or anything. I'm sure they do somewhere. I know Interfaith, they do a lot for people. And I had seeked a shelter one time, but I had to go to San Diego. It was Rachel's Women's Center.
Oh, you know, there's some interesting experiences. A lot of people don't like shelters because of one, it's almost like prison, and two, it's like it restricts you. It restricts your movements. Like, for example, imagine you have been having your own autonomy and you have like a Project Room Key, a 6 o'clock curfew. Who the heck wants to go to a curfew? Because they're grown adults. We're not children. So why should we have someone dictate like we're in prison and we're free? You know, I don't want to voluntarily go to prison if I don't have to. You know, I would break a law. So why in the world would I want to be going into a program? And when you don't want to go, they say you're service resistant. You know, but I'd be saying people that are saying that they don't have the balls to do this, to run these programs or get into these programs themselves to see how it is. They're always the cowards that run around, sitting around pontificating about these kind of these kind of nebulous kind of claims. So what is like what would be the best way if we could help you? Because I sense, you know, you're a kind hearted person and I know that this is not the life that you want to leave. So what would be what gives you a good track?
Well, I was told here that last week, I think it was, which I'm just now getting around to being able to do so. But I was told that if you are having trouble getting your ID or your birth certificate,
right,
that if you know at least two people who have an ID that can verify, you know, to say, yes, this person is who they say they
are. Right.
Then I forget what they call it now. Anyway, Notary Public.
Oh, Notary Public. Okay.
The Notary Public will notarize a paper stating, yes, this person had verified that they are, you know, who they say they are.
Right, right.
And they can take that with $10 and go to the DMV or the birth records, and they can get what they need.
So this is what will help you jumpstart. Is the organizations like Interfaith and them willing to do that for you?
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that, because everyone needs to be in a place where, because it's about to rain in the next few days, and actually next week as well. So no one wants you. I don't want anyone out here suffering like this. And I stayed out in the rain in Los Angeles. It is very, very hard to stay dry and warm in a freaking, and, you know, especially it's like where it rained practically 2 weeks all day and all night. It was like, and it's very difficult to sleep, because once you get a little quick sleep, then it's like, and then you've got to make sure your stuff ain't wet. Then you got your cold. And then, you know, you don't want to smell. But, you know, how can you keep your stuff clean? Yeah, exactly. It was hard, man, because they got, like, California's Los Angeles is very, very aggressive against people trying to find a nook or cranny. They'll call the police on you for looking crazy. So, you know, so that's a real sad reality. Have you guys, because I see police around, and I see them around some of the areas on the house are there any are the police bother you guys or talk to you or try to tell you you can't stay some places?
But they focus on a lot of, you know what I'm saying, but, you know, we see them upstairs, they write their tickets. Ain't nobody going to court anymore.
Yeah.
That just collect the ticket. Now they got a Christmas tree that we put the tickets on instead of bugs.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets they got going.
So they give you guys tickets? What, I mean, how do you expect you to pay it if
they don't know they. That's what I'm saying. So it goes on the Christmas tree.
Okay.
And when you sign it, you sign tree.
So you put it on the Christmas tree because basically there's nothing that they can do about it.
Yeah, exactly.
The tree don't have it. So that's horrible. What's a waste of time and taxpayers' money? They could have spent all of that time trying to give you guys places to stay. So have you been facing this as well?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. So some of the, I do, because I know there's like, and I see the RVs over there. Do the city, your neighbors, do they get upset when they see you guys around?
No, not necessarily. They kind of got used to it.
Okay.
And we just do our own thing. You know, we don't bother them. They don't, you know, go near their vehicles or touching anything or, you know, throwing our clothes and stuff around.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, we kind of keep our distance, you know, and just keep our area clean. And it's usually okay.
Well, man, this is, like, very interesting because I've been trying to compare and contrast how it looks here. I noticed another thing that at least they do that L.A. they would not do is they don't like the unhoused on the beach. They've just ran. If you see you guys on the beach, they're running out to run you out. They're arresting people and things like that. So I don't see that kind of thing going on here. So it's a little bit.
You don't see that going on.
It's going on?
Yeah, of course it's going on.
Okay.
The normal people that would be out here don't even come down here with these. Some, not all the people out, the majority of some people down here.
Okay.
They don't want to come down here. Like
they
want to be late tonight.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's smart. So they don't want to cause tension to themselves. Okay.
Gotcha. Perfect.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, I was smart because, like, too, I knew when I was staying in the beach, I would hurry up and leave so they wouldn't be able to pinpoint me because, you know, you got the neighbors that take your pictures and running up on you, all that crazy.
They are just men. Mm-hmm. Truth be. Yeah. They are not like what you think they are.
Right. Really?
Wow. Anyways, you know, you guys are giving me an education here because I know L.A., so I can't say I know it well about Oceanside, and I'm glad that you guys are giving me the 411 on what's going on. What would you think would be helpful to at Oceanside, how they could help all of us in this kind of predicament? What would they need to do?
They're doing bad things.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have a number 211 that you can call.
Oh, yeah.
And
311 to call if they see encampments here in Los Angeles.
that's how they were dealing with the situation.
Right.
But there's no numbers for us when they bother us. But, you know, that's another. That's what the city doesn't want to talk about that. They align and support those kind of groups.
Right. Any time when the homeless people have some kind of situation, like if it's going to storm for like 4 or 5 days,
yeah.
People will request them to call 211 and tell them that, you know, you don't have shelter or anything like that, and they will pay for your room to stay in.
Oh, that's good. That, well, at least that's a creative way, but they could do that a little more longer just instead of it having to rain. They could do a lot, because most people don't want to be sitting out here freezing and flooding themselves or drowning or dying of hypothermia.
And there's other situations that could possibly take place where, you know, you can get food and they have pantries. If you need clothes or shoes, transportation, any kind of medical conditions and stuff. They give you all the information that you need for all that.
Oh, man, that's wonderful. Again, you've educated me on what's really going on here. We have different activist groups here in Los Angeles, like Street Watch, LA Can, and those kind of things, because the criminalization of unhoused people were so bad that we had to stand up and stop them from just basically putting us out in the desert, which just they're still trying to do, getting away from society, and so we can just die. And there's so many people who had so many issues with the pandemic. They're living out like families, like with infant kids and things like that in the parks and stuff. It's totally very, very, very sad. Yeah. So where does most of the unhoused, is there any park here? That's another thing I noticed. You guys don't have a park that I've seen of.
There's one up of College, I think, and from what I hear, you're allowed to camp over there.
Oh, really? I'll have to check that out then. I would definitely would love to look into that. Yeah. Patricia, and I didn't get your name, sir.
Really?
Philip?
Barry.
Barry, okay. Barry, I'm sorry. Thank you very much for giving me your insight to it. And I am going to be milling about a little bit more. I'll come back again because I got to go to San Diego another time. And I'll interview you guys, hopefully, and check on how you guys are doing. Thank you very much. This is Theo. Thank you, Barry. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy Unhoused. And I hope you all are listening and learning, and meeting in the light of understanding is our ultimate goal. We'll be right back.
This is Theo Henderson from We Didn't House. We have gotten such warm, heartwarming stories, as also the educational understanding on what it is like to be displaced out here in Oceanside, California. And what I find, it's just kind of the similar things what I find in Los Angeles and Santa Barbara, San Jose, Santa Cruz. We all have that in common. It's really tough out here. And it's not easy. It's what people make it believe. You know, you can't have a famous actor portraying unhoused and not knowing it's really of a tough circle. So I have another guest here that he's been gracious enough to invite me into his circle. And Mr. Hillbilly has spoke very highly of you and so said some warm things about you. So here, what I'll do, I'm going to introduce myself. My name is Theo. What's your name, sir?
Jesus. I go by Jesus.
Jesus, thank you for taking the time and the kindness to be willing to tell me your experiences. So how long have you been out here?
I've been in this area about 3 years.
How did you end up in this area for 3 years?
What happened? I had lost my apartment, my job, and me and my ex and my kids were out here.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I had met a gentleman that he's like my grandpa now, but he helped me get an RV to get off the streets. Yeah, we were in a tent, actually, right over here buying Yum Yum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yes, he's definitely said, you know, he's an eye on you, and he obviously spoke very highly of you because something, you must have a very good nature about yourself. So what was it like the first night with being out here with your family? You said you had your kids out here as well. So what was that like?
I felt like a failure. I felt like I wasn't protecting them, right, that I failed them. And everybody around me that saw us on the streets, instead of giving a helping hand, they looked down on me, you know. It was hard. It was very hard, and yeah, I didn't think we were going to make it that first night. I couldn't sleep, yeah. You know, it was cold. Yeah. All I was doing was trying to keep them warm, you know, and then thank God for Benos. Brother Benos is an organization that would make breakfast and give us food for the day.
Good.
Yeah, and they helped us out a lot.
That's a life sin, that the people that see a need and want to make the world a better place. So how was you able to navigate? Is your family still out here? But it sound like they. So what took place that you, because I obviously usually, from the interviews I have, most of the fathers allow the families, the wife and the kids, to be taken care of first before they do. So what's going on? Is that what's going on?
No, I had gotten an RV that was broken down. I got it for free, and I worked hard on it. I had it for 7 months, and I made it as homey as possible. And when I got some money, I bought supplies to really, really, really fix it and renovate it. And the night before I renovated it, the police came, and they said they were doing a routine check. And then they called my ex out, and they were running my name and her name. I haven't been arrested for anything since I was 16. I'm 32.
Right.
You know, but they took my RV and they took my kids.
Oh, my God. That's horrible. I'm so sorry to hear that. And so they're into with CPS, obviously.
CPS never made it on scene.
Police took your kids, literally.
Yeah, well, he said that he didn't feel comfortable with us having our kids. And we hadn't been in trouble, so we didn't know that we could have said no.
Yeah.
But he said he didn't feel comfortable with us having our kids, and so he had field evidence come with car seats and take all three of our kids. And I didn't know that was wrong. This happened on a Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
They told us to go to the police station. We went over there. We didn't receive a ticket, nothing. We didn't get charged with anything. They just basically just took our kids.
Oh,
when we got to the police station, we didn't know the names of the officers, so they couldn't tell us where our kids were. We camped outside OPD station all Sunday night until Monday morning until they could finally tell us where they were.
That has to be a horrible experience, that here comes a police rolls up on you a Sunday, snatch your kids, don't give any identifying information, no paperwork, and you don't know where your kids are. They could have been imposter officers. They could have thrown the kids off somewhere, and you don't know where their state of mind and ability. And I could imagine your ex was just in a frightful state as well as you.
Oh, yeah. It broke her mentally. It turned her it was a year without seeing her kids or in her care. It broke her mentally. She ended up, you know, taking a bad route to try to cope. You know, me and her, we no longer see each other, and I guess I don't.
It had to be traumatic because most of my mothers are really connected to kids. If you do that, you know, that messes them up.
Oh, yeah, we spent every day that I had was about the kids. Every morning, every night, it was all about the kids. You know, and being without them, it hurts. It hurts, man. It was just, it happened so fast, and like I said, we weren't aware, you know, and it's just the depression hit hard, and here we are.
And people wonder why we were talking about defund the police, because they had no business doing that. It's not a crime to be poor. And it, many of, even CPS would say, you know, just because you're not neglected the kid, you're just poor. You know, and you're caring for the kid to care for, you just went and take the kids and then you leave no information about your own children. That's horrible.
No, the police, they treated me like I was a criminal from the beginning. And then 5 months after, when they found out that we were going to the courts, we were trying to get our kids back, we were trying to stay on track, and they found out that we were working hard, and then they found out that the CPS worker did not agree with the way they took our kids. They came and they checked up on me. They actually had me in handcuffs for 45 minutes, saying they didn't know who I was because I didn't have an ID. They were basically, like, bullying me.
I'm so sorry that you went through that. That's horrible. It just breaks my heart to hear this.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm getting through it. You know, I spend every day trying to help someone else because there's always someone else that's less fortunate.
Yes. Yeah, but, you know, you don't deserve that. You didn't deserve that. You know, and Mr. Hillbilly, as well as you, you guys don't deserve that. You deserve the same dignity and respect, just like people. Just because you lost, I don't know, your luck doesn't give you people the right to just step on you. That just really infuriates me, that the experiences that many of the unhoused that I continually go across the LA and as well as the California, they experience the same kind of indignity. When are we going to stop this? So what is the best way for us to help you, if we could help you? Because I've heard that there may be a project room key here, but there's not a project room key here. It's not really well run well, or it's like a prison. So what's your insights on this?
Well, I mean, all I really need is just a chance to go job hunting. If I can have a place to shower, I can go job hunting. I've been a hard worker all my life. You know, it's very hard for me to find a job. I was born out of the country. So I have to find jobs that pay under the table, or, like, you know, gardening or something like that. Yeah. But if I find a job,
produce and things like that.
Yes, yeah. I'm a very hard worker. And I'm a jack of all trades. I know gardening, roofing, framing, electrical. Yeah.
Okay, I understand. Because, you know, I know that in certain places, like I knew in Oxnard, they had a lot of workers that are undocumented that are working in the produce farms and things like that. And they have that same fear. They're hard workers. They literally put food on everybody's table, whether you're a Republican, NIMBY, Democrat, or proclaim to be progressive. They are putting in the work that so we can be able to take advantage of their hard work. And the least we could do is offer the kindness of citizenship or them to make sure that they are secure just as we are. So is there anything else you'd like to leave with the audience?
Yeah, I just want people to know that they should humble themselves. That just because we're out here and we're less fortunate, that they're not better than us, because they can end up here just as fast as anybody else can.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Theo Henderson from Weedian House. You hear many voices out here saying the same thing. So despite all of the NIMBY's conversations or the hit pieces like Streets of Shame, here is the words from unhoused people with lived experience and have been saying the same from the beginning of my episode. Let us meet in a light of understanding, and hopefully we can make the world a better place. Thank you very much for your story.
Thank you. Thank you.
This thus concludes our episode of Oceanside, California. By now, I hope that you've stayed with us and learned about the anguish and the difficulties and the pain that my unhoused friends have suffered through. Their stories should be told and be uplifted, and people should be moved and galvanized to do something about it. When I ended this episode in Oceanside, I returned back when I first started, where the waterfall was. I couldn't help but see the same notices, and I can see the comparison of the same way that was done for the unhoused before I was ejected out of the park in Chinatown, where the signs littered the area. There's no difference in that. The one thing in common that I've noticed in all the other areas is they definitely vilify the unhoused. They rely on the apathy and lethargy of housed people. They rely on this tested tropes about unhoused people in the most negative of fashion. They rely on iconography to demonize unhoused people so you could not see them as human beings. They rely on poor people. Poor people to vilify and say that I broke out of this cycle of poverty. Why can't you? They use every tool in the book. And the distressing thing is not always the rich that have these kind of ideologies. It's the poor that will be sitting and working at grocery stores that will be shutting down because they won't want to pay them hero pay. But ready to break their neck and stomp, curb stomp an unhoused person if they're stealing a loaf of bread or trying to survive and have food. They will sit in and have a joke and demean the unhoused person if they're having mental health issues or they are suffering from substance usage. These are also the antagonists in the game of learning how to demonize unhoused people. Once you have poor people looking at other poor people to demonize, the rich person can take money from both people's pockets. And unfortunately, we have too much of a sad reality when you see in these city council meetings where parents or families are coming to demonize unhoused people as saying the safety of their children is paramount, considering the unhoused families with children. They're not considered paramount. As you heard, some of the stories are very gut-wrenching and hard and sad. And I hope that we move toward action as once we meet in the light of understanding, but I hope we move and make this a distant memory 30 years from now. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy Unhoused. I thank you all for listening, and it is my hope we meet in the light of understanding and do something about it.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Are you looking to build this year? If so, there is no better time than right now to start planning and to get your spot on the construction schedule. If you need a garage, a stall barn, a storage for vehicles, RV, boat, collectibles, or even a shop for your farm, hobbies, or car restoration projects, visit MortonBuildings.com and start your construction process. With superior materials, craftsmanship, best-in-class warranty, Morton Buildings are made to last for generations. At Morton, the difference is in the details. From their cutting-edge innovations to their craftsmen in the field, they are dedicated to surpassing expectations. Their legacy of excellence spans more than 120 years, and Morton Buildings is 100% employee-owned with more than 250,000 satisfied customers. That means they're the industry leader you can trust. When you choose Morton, you'll experience quality at every step of the building process, starting before the walls even go up. Visit MortonBuildings.com to get started today.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.